Talk to Them Softly Out of the Dead series continuing on, and we have a very, very special guest in the house today, ladies and gentlemen. It is none other than the genius behind the masterpiece that is Art of the Dead. It is the writer-director, Rolf. Rolf, I need you to pronounce your last name for me.
Okay.
Just so
sure.
I don't. Yeah.
Rolf Kanevsky. Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Kanevsky.
Yes.
Kanevsky. All right. Kanevsky.
That's it.
Yep. Kanevsky. All right. Rolf Kanevsky. Welcome to Podcast of the Softly, Rolf.
Great to be here. Glad to talk to you about.
That's fantastic. So, for those who have come in late, for the uninitiated, could you give us a little bit of a mini bio, the IMDb mini bio on Rolf Kanevsky?
Sure. Basically, I'm an independent filmmaker. I've been making movies for about 30 years now. I started in New York. I made my first film when I was 20 years old, a film called There's Nothing Out There, which has sort of become a cult classic over the years. Just came out on Blu-ray this year for the first time, a special edition. It's been sort of considered Scream before Scream in a way. We did it 6 years before Scream, and it held a similar character who's seen every horror film on video and knows what the warnings and rules are. Since that film, I moved to California, and I've been working relentlessly on independent films, horror movies, comedies, thrillers, family films, sort of jump around the whole spectrum, but I've directed about 8 or 9 horror films now, and those are the ones that people seem to be gravitating towards a lot.
Yes, I just finished writing a horror movie myself. It's a very popular genre.
Yes. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to work in the genre, and you don't have to follow the rules as much when you're doing, like, Lifetime thrillers or family stuff where it's very cookie cutter, but here you get to kind of use your imagination and go wild, and yeah. I try to do just that on Art of the Dead.
That's true. You can have fun with cliches as well, though, in horror movies. I mean, there's a lot of tropes that you, as much as people say they're cliches, they want you to hit those beats.
Oh, no, absolutely. That was, my first film was kind of a parody making fun of all the cliches. I wasn't making fun of horror films. I was just making fun of some of the lazy, like the cat that jumps out of nowhere and standing in front of an open window or dropping the knife and all these things that the audience always yell, don't do that. So I thought it'd be fun to have a character who's seen horror films, who says and does all those, tells people what not to do in a horror movie. And at that point, no one had really done that take on it. Right. So I've many times have played around with conventions of expectations and try to play the game with the audience of what they expected to be and then throw them for a loop a little bit. That's kind of fun.
Okay. So where did art from the Art of the Dead come from? I see it as very much a picture of Dorian Gray meets The Exorcist meets Seven. Was that your thing?
Yeah. Pretty much, yes. The producers of the film are two guys in Vegas, brothers, the Mahal brothers. And they had contacted me a couple of years ago, and we did a film called Party Bus to Hell, or Bus Party to Hell.
Right. I love that one as well. That was great. But unfortunately, I didn't get to do press on that one.
Oh, you did? Okay. Mm. Yeah, that was total madcap and real splatter comedy horror thing. And we had fun with that, and then they wanted to do another film together, and we went back and forth. They were trying to come up with an idea they liked, and then finally they threw out this thing about, what about an art collector who buys these paintings and they start to kill him and his family? And that's sort of what they gave me. And then I thought immediately, okay, well, I was a big fan of Night Gallery, Rod Serling's TV show after Twilight Zone in the 70s.
Right, right.
So as soon as I saw that, I said, okay, we got to do that. And then when I thought of a series of paintings, I thought, well, with the exception of the movie Seven, there really hasn't been that many films that deal with the seven deadly sins and how they could corrupt the family. So I came up with the idea of seven paintings representing the seven deadly sins and how they affect everybody. And that was sort of the branching off point from the movie. And then it was easy to go there because I did a little research and found the actual animals that correspond with the seven deadly sins, because I was like, if they're going to hang these up in their house, they should be nice paintings that the family would hang in the children's room and the teenage daughter's room. So these sort of serene animal paintings that have an evil underneath. And of course, yes, when you're dealing with paintings, Dorian Gray or Oscar Wilde, hence the character name Dorian Wilde, and the paintings were painted in 1890 when Oscar Wilde wrote Portrait of Dorian Gray. So some non too subtle references to the classics.
I know, but all great, fantastic. I really can't get enough of this movie. It's so delicious. But you know what has stuck in my brain since I finished watching it the first 100 times?
Okay, what?
Is I just get this horrible feeling that this is one of those really great concepts that Hollywood would like try and rip off.
Well, yeah. I mean, the weird thing is, I guess this year, I've seen a few people comparing. There was a movie, I don't know if you saw, called The Velvet Buzzsaw.
Yeah, I did see that.
When I saw the trailer, because it was Netflix earlier this year, we shot around the same time they were shooting. I mean, my script was written before Dan Gilroy wrote his script, because there was an article that he said he came up with it in December, and then it came together really fast, and I wrote mine in July. But when I saw the trailer, I thought, oh boy, how close is this? And, you know, it was a $20 million film with big name actors, and, you know, ours was a, you know, much smaller little film. But when I saw the movie, I was happy that we had done something, I think, a lot more fun and cooler with the idea and went for it. Whereas that film was a little more safe and, you know, felt toned down in my opinion. Whereas, you know, I just went as all out as I could on my idea. So,
I know it's
similar ideas in the same year.
I know it's spooky. Do you want to hear my story? It's like that.
Okay.
Real quick.
Yeah.
My friend and I, Sean, another screenwriter here in Australia, we've been writing this movie for like 2 years because we don't live in the same spot. So we've been writing it like over the internet. So first of all, do you know or have you seen Angel Has Fallen, the Jerry Butler trilogy ending?
The new one? The latest one?
Yeah, the latest one with Nick Nolte in it.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I saw the other two, but I haven't seen the part three yet.
But you know about it. You know of it, right?
No, I know. I saw the trailer. Yeah.
Anyway, there is a scene in this. Well, I don't know. Do you mind if I spoil it for you, or do you really want to see it?
That's fine.
Okay. Because if you really want to watch it, I won't tell you. But anyway, there's a scene obviously where he's at his lowest, right? Jerry Butler's at his lowest, and everyone's against him now. And the bad guys have engineered it that way. And so he's out in the middle of nowhere, and we think he's just on the run, but he's really going to find his old man who's a survivalist, who is Nick Nolte, right? So anyway, he's got to know that the powers that be can find him wherever he hides, because they're enemies at the highest levels, right? They're manipulating the White House from the inside, okay? So it stands to reason that he's not going to be hard to find, and he knows he doesn't have a lot of time. Anyway, the thing that happens is obviously the old man is a survivalist because he's Jerry Butler's father. He would know how to, you know, obviously he learnt these skills from someone. Chances are his dad would be the same kind of cat, right? So he is. So when the bad guys turn up, man, he's like ready for them. And what's spooky is they go underneath the house, through this tunnel, out the other side, and he says, you know, what the hell are we doing? And next minute, he pumps this little thing and blows up his own house with all the dudes inside. And we have a scene in this script. Now, I admit a few people in Los Angeles have seen it, and this was, I don't know when this movie was written. That would be the interesting thing to see, when this movie was written.
Yeah.
So a few people in LA have seen this script, a director and his production company. I'm not saying he leaked it or showed it to anyone else, but you never really know when people read your stuff in LA, you know, you never really know you never know who's looking or watching or, you know, hey, what's this? But yeah, there is a scene in Angel Has Fallen, and if you read our script, which I'm pretty sure was written before it, it's nearly, except for the dialogue, it's the same scene. It's exactly the same scene.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So it was like, it was so spooky. I so much that I called my friend. I said, you have to, first of all, go and watch Angel Has Fallen, because literally this scene that we have written is in this movie. It's not exactly, and our scene has other characters in it as well, but the sequence of events surrounding the blowing up of the house and everything to get rid of the bad guys, and he had it rigged to blow up, is spookily similar. So, you know, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But we're here to talk about Art of the Dead. Rolf, during the series so far, everyone has been playing our little game, and our little game is called Seven Deadly Questions. We talk about the sins, and if during the production at all, whether you were guilty of the seven deadly sins. Are you ready to play Seven Deadly Questions?
Sure.
All right, here you go, Rolf. Lust. Did you feel lust at all while making, conceiving, or whatever, of Art of the Dead?
Did I feel lust at all, you said?
Lust, yeah, the sin of lust.
Did I feel it, or did I experience it, or what?
Yeah, feel it, experience it. Like, you might have had a really nice cup of coffee one day, and you lusted after another one.
Not really during this movie, because I have a cat who was diagnosed with diabetes just before I left to make the movie, and I was on the phone dealing. You know, the cat's good. You know,
he's all right. He's fine.
He's doing fine. That's marvelous.
Well done.
Constantly in like just. Distract. I mean, it's very hard making a movie when you have an animal that you really care about.
Oh, yes, certainly. Oh, that's terrible. I'm glad he's recovered. I'm glad he's recovered.
Besides that, I still try to make the film sexy in places and things like
right.
that.
Right. No, I understand. But your cat has recovered, though.
That is doing great. Yeah, right.
That's
now,
fantastic. Wonderful to hear. Gluttony.
Well, whenever I'm doing a movie, I do eat. I don't go crazy because I'm, you know, got so much stress on the set, but, I you don't work out as much, so you probably do always gain a little weight, when you're shooting. So I'd say a little bit of gluttony, yeah.
Right. Lucas said that the gummy bears are very popular. Big bowls of gummy bears.
Okay. Yeah, there was always some food around there. So,
yeah. He said that the actors, he said you can tell that the actors, they love their candy while they're making a movie.
Sure.
Yeah, because he said you always, like you said, he said you always get heavier because usually the catering's pretty good.
Yes.
Okay. So, greed. Any feel greedy at any time?
Greed. Well... When you're making a movie, you always want more time and money. I don't know if you call that greed or envy, actually, but we had some long days, so I guess, you know, making sure that I got everything right is a little greedy, but I don't like to walk away unless I think I have it done, and we were supportive, so I was able to get everything I needed, so in that way, yes and no, I guess.
Cool. Sloth, were you lazy at any time during the filming?
No, that never happened.
Yep, I'd imagine. I thought about not asking that question because the director is probably the least laziest person.
Yeah. I'm always there 100%. And,
right.
You know, and little sleep and just exactly.
That's right. That's a given. Wrath.
No sloth for the wicked, yeah.
Yeah, wrath is a difficult one, but wrath.
Wrath, yeah.
Did anyone piss you off?
exactly. That's the question. Overall, not too badly. We were pretty good. You always have problems on a set and there's things, but rather than point the finger and the blame, the idea is you want to fix the problem and just like overcome it and move on versus like saying, yelling at people, why didn't you do this or that or stuff like that. You just need to fix it and move on because everyone is killing themselves trying to make the best movie. And I didn't have anyone trying to sabotage the film or, hurt the film. So no, I would say no real rap.
Exactly. Very good. Envy? We sort of you touched on that envy. You envious.
I say yes. There was envy because actually the envy occurred a little bit after the movie because Alex Reinhardt, who played Kim, the lead, Lewis's girlfriend from college.
Right.
They put all the actors up in pretty nice places. I had a good place to stay too, but she put together a collection of like what she did there online afterwards, and she went to see shows and like had all this great time. She made a great friend and she got to see Vegas and she went to the Beatles show Love. And I was like, she had a fun time making this film. I'm like, I didn't have any time to have fun making this film. It's like, I was always just so busy working. I guess I'm a little envious of the actors that, got to enjoy themselves in Vegas as well as, do a great job on the film.
That's fantastic. And the last but not least, Pride. Obviously, you're very proud of the film.
Very proud of the film, yes. I was, I say definitely Pride. I worked hard, but I was happy with what we were getting. And the shot that I say the most guilty of that was that one shot when Kim is looking for Dylan, Lucas's character, and at the end with all the toads, and she goes in and she sees him inside, inside the painting, and we have a POV from under the water, right. And that was all done live with the camera shooting slow motion anamorphic in front of kind of a fish tank where we put water in it, and then we had someone blowing bubbles to create the swirl, so there was no optical effect. It was all done practical on the set, and when we played it back, everyone was so happy with that, and I was like, that's like the old school filmmaking, and I loved pulling that off and doing it. So I felt very prideful at that moment.
That's fantastic. So, Rolf, what would you consider the deadliest of the seven deadly sins?
Well, I guess it has to be wrath because that's the most violent one. So that's where you kill people,
Quite literally the deadliest.
Quite literally.
We have to think logically that each one can lead you into great peril, if not death.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I would say, in this movie, envy leads to some horrific events in the movie that that turn out to be, I think, the most disturbing stuff in the film.
Yes. Well, Rolf, my final question. I love this film so much. It's been absolutely wonderful to talk to the cast and yourself. My final question, though, is not related to Art of the Dead.
Okay.
I still have a lot of VHS tapes, and I still have my... the other day, I was looking at your filmography, and I realized while I was cleaning a shelf that I still have a VHS copy of Bikini Drive-In.
Of what?
Bikini Drive-In.
Sorry about that.
You're right.
So what was it?
Bikini Drive-In.
What? Oh, Bikini Drive-In. Yes. Oh, okay. my little cameo for Fred Olen Ray.
Yeah. Can you tell me your Bikini Drive-In story?
Well, I was only on the set for, one day on that. Fred Olen Ray, director who's done hundreds of movies now in his career.
Yeah.
I was friends with him when I moved out to California, and he asked me if I wanted to do a cameo on the film, and I said sure. So I spent the day out there shooting wherever it was with Richard Gabay, which is funny because he had been in a lot of Fred movies, and we're both lost at the drive-in, and a horse walks between us. That's what I remember, and we just sort of shrug and move on. So it was a little gag. The funny thing is, Richard Gavai was in one of my movies as well later on, called Tomorrow by Midnight, or Midnight 5, which has never come out in America.
Right.
Then later on, he wound up producing some of my Lifetime movies. So I've written some scripts that he's produced as a, you know, as a producer as well for Lifetime. So we've had an ongoing relationship.
That's fantastic. Well, I still, look, if I ever bump into you, I might purposely carry this videotape around. You can sign it for me, and then I got to try and hunt down Fred and get him to sign it for me.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So if you're ever...
Have you ever seen my sex comedies? I've done a few of those, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've done a lot of cable movies as well, but the pretty cool movies are, you know, Jacqueline Hyde is an interesting take on the Jacqueline Hyde tale.
Yeah,
cool. Female version of that. So I'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, Rolf, you're a favorite director of mine. I love your work. I really love Art of the Dead. Can't wait to watch that again, and I can't wait to watch any more movies. I would really love to work with you one day. I got a film coming out next year myself, so stay tuned.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. No, I'd love to. Thank you for spreading the word on the movie, and I guess I'm going to be doing a Lifetime film, a directing one, writing, directing one. I'm doing that, working on it right now in December.
Right.
So I'm doing a movie that so that'll be my, you know, much tamer movie because it's television, but this year. But I have some great horror projects that I'm trying to get off the ground for next year as well. That you know, I just try to keep going and doing different and unusual things if I can.
That's cool. Tell our audience, Rolf, before we go, where they can find Art of the Dead.
Well, Art of the Dead is streaming now on Amazon Prime, and I believe a few other streaming sites out there. I know it's been released in Australia through Umbrella,
yes,
which is really cool.
Yes, very cool.
And I personally say too, I'm actually a huge fan of Australian cinema. One of my great moments was I had my movie Jacqueline Hyde at the Brussels Film Festival, and Richard Franklin was a judge that year.
Oh,
and
yes.
His career from Patrick and Road Games, and Psycho 2 is one of my all-time favorite films and everything. And I met him, and he actually really liked my movie and was really cool. He signed a lobby card of Patrick, a German lobby card I had.
Yeah.
And he was so nice that afterwards, because I couldn't find the original soundtrack to Patrick, he actually sent me the original score that Brian May had done, as well as The Adventures of Estevan Nell, which was not released in the States here. So he was really cool and a wonderful guy, and I love that. And Not Quite Hollywood is one of the greatest documentaries of all time about art and cinema.
Yes, yes, I heartily agree. Not only is it a wonderful documentary, but it is an enduring document now that we really did have a very, very cool film industry at one time here in the Great Down Under. And it has been a great pleasure here in the Great Down Under to talk to you, Rolf Kubisky, about Art of the Dead. It's a marvelous film. Get out there and see it. We've got one more tomorrow. We were talking with Robert Donovan tomorrow, who's Father Gregory. He's your Max von Sydow in this movie. And
I've worked with Robert 20 times. He's an awesome guy. And yes, he's not Bryan Cranston, but he gets mistaken for him all the time.
I know. I was like,
yeah.
I said, man, he's like, have you heard the story of it, that Robert Bronzy?
No.
The guy who looks like Charles Bronson.
Oh, yes, I have. Oh, yes, of course. I've seen the I saw one of those. Yeah.
Very similar.
Yeah,
I look at Robert and I go, man, he must get... Does he get like? Is he? Why is he not like Bryan Cranston's stand-in or something like that? You know.
I don't know. We got to get him in a movie together playing brothers. That would be awesome.
That would be cool. Yeah. Take all my money. Take all my money. Rolf, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Good luck with all of your stuff. Thank you for giving us Art of the Dead. It's been a real pleasure, mate. Thank you for being on Podcasts and Softly.
Thank you. It was wonderful. Great. I'm looking forward to hearing it all.